Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that occasionally brings you advice from two technology experts. But that's not just what we call ourselves. It's what our moms tell people when they need a new iPad, and we're the only ones who know what we're talking about. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way, maybe about once a month or so.
Yeah. It's a laugh or two along the way. That hasn't changed. Right. The duration of along the way has, but that's okay. You know,
yeah.
We're operating under the principles of scarcity, right? Our words and wisdom are more valuable when they're hard to come by.
That is true. You know, we're also, you know, busy people. We've got some things going on, and sometimes it happens.
You know what else sometimes happens, Noah, is sometimes we accidentally take a month off and miss an entire Apple event. Oops.
Yeah, we actually missed. I feel like we haven't. It's been a while. I'm trying to think if we've missed an event before. I don't know if we have, or it's been a long time.
I don't think we have. I think since starting Dark Mode in January 2022, I think it was. I don't think we've missed an event since then. Although this one was kind of a weird half event, I suppose. It was, I don't know. I kind of like the format. I like the idea that Apple can just say, hey, we've got a new thing. We're just going to release it with a video. You know, we still get the fun of the video, but it doesn't necessarily have to be like a whole hour-long thing where they like talk about this new store that has pies, and then you can go in there and they'll pat you on the back and give you a lollipop. You know, we don't need all the frills. We just need, boom, here's new iPads. See you later.
Yeah, I definitely like that aspect. I appreciate, like, it's cool that they don't, like, some of their products, I guess, like, you know, the iPhone, you know it's going to be in the, you know, in September. I think the iPhone is pretty much the only one that's like that, because, you know, like, typically iPads I think are in the spring, and typically Macs will be, you know, after the iPhone, maybe like in October, November. That happens a lot, but they're also spread out, like they've happened at other times. So I think it's cool that, like, yeah, Apple can just drop these things and we still get the full production with all the cool transitions and the, you know, Apple Park, everything, but they can just drop something and be like, here's the new iPads. You know, they don't have to wait for like one of their big key times. They can just do it. I like it.
Yeah, I always hate when we have to wait for one of their, you know, standard events. Like, we always used to get, I mean, really the iPad Air would tend more often than not to go along with the iPhone. So it was kind of nice to have the iPads kind of grouped together for once, even though we didn't get an iPad mini. So I know a lot of people were mad about that one. But honestly, okay, there's a lot to talk about for the iPads, but let's back up a little bit because we got to contextualize where we are right now. When was our last episode? Was it April?
Yeah.
No.
I think it might have been.
Was it? Oh, dear.
I mean, it was a month, yeah. Good.
I think you're right. I think it was April 28th.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, no. That's really embarrassing. Well, what was happening then? Well, actually, you know what? I'll tell you what did happen since then. I became a business. I'm a real business now, Noah.
Whoa.
Look, I can prove it.
Let's see it.
I have a binder.
Whoa.
Look at this.
That looks so fancy.
Oh, and you've not seen anything yet. Look at this, corporate records.
What the heck is this?
Miani Media.
Whoa.
Look at that.
What the heck?
I'm like a real guy now, kind of.
That's crazy.
Now, in this binder is a terribly large amount of paperwork that I've been pretending not to be aware of for the past 4 days. But You know, tomorrow's Memorial Day. It's a holiday. What am I supposed to do? I can't do anything then. It's illegal. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's business how it works. Business is closed. Right? It's illegal to work on Memorial Day. It's not a business
day.
But, and I'm a business now, so exactly. I'm closed. That's very good. That's very good advice. I'm actually very, you know what? That solidifies my procrastination in the best possible way, and I'm here for it. But I'll tell you what. We got to talk about the situation at hand. Let's start with the iPads, because that's in the past, and then we'll do WWDC, because that's in the future.
That's good. That's good.
How does that sound?
Makes sense.
I like it. So you may have also noticed that I have not put out my video on the new iPad yet. That's because I was traveling. This is the first time not only for us missing an Apple event, but I missed the launch as well because my brother had his college graduation like 2 days after the launch. So I wasn't here. I was sitting there like, well, I got the iPad. I had it. I've been reviewing it. My video should hopefully be out soon. I am waiting on a sponsor approval. And I mean, I don't want to spoil too much because I still want people to watch the actual review, but I do want to talk candidly about the new iPad because I feel like everything that I can say about this is also going to be true for you and your 2018 iPad Pro, which is they absolutely nailed the hardware. Every single time, the iPad Pro is just such a nice device. I mean, let me grab, where's my other iPad? Hang on a second.
Got the iPad comparison coming up.
Got to do it live, you know? Old iPad, new iPad. I had to get it in white because I want it to look different. I don't know. I gotta have some sense of nuance, right? Yeah. Some sense of change, I suppose. But the new iPads are actually like insanely thin. You know, here's your 2018, and here's the new M4. Look at that thing. Whoa. I never thought that this thing was thick. Apparently, I was wrong. It's crazy, dude, how thin these things are.
That is actually striking.
But I'll tell you what. Right? It's weird. And it does, there is a benefit to it because, as we've talked about before, once you put an iPad in a Magic Keyboard, it's a little bit big, a little bulky. You know, a 13-inch iPad Pro, that's a big boy. All right. When you put that in a case next to an M3 MacBook Air, it's not like you're saving anything in terms of size and weight. So here's my hypothesis, and this is really broadly applying to all iPads, not just the new ones, but I'm putting my money where my mouth is, and that's what I'm doing here. And that is, the 11-inch iPad Pro is the only one that makes sense. And to make it make sense even more, since I actually filmed my review, I have exchanged my regular base model iPad for the one with cellular. You can see my extra antenna bands down there. Look at those boys. I never used to like it back in, do you remember the early days when they had that disgusting black, like, square rectangular plastic piece on the back?
Oh yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah,
that was disgusting. They had that even in like 2017. They had the, have you seen those? Let me pull up a picture of that.
I remember there's like the original, like they, iPad.
It took them until 2018. Yeah, but it took them until 2018 to like really make it look halfway decent. In 2017, oh, here we go. Here's an old article about it. Because I didn't realize that it was that black plastic piece that stuck around until 2017. Oh my good Lord. This is the most, I'm sorry. This entire website is covered in ads and it's the most visually disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life. But let me share that tab. Here it is. Ugh! Even in 2016, they had this disgusting thing. And then the 2017 iPad Pro, they like kept the weird notch effect, but they made it into like it looks a little better. But the 2018s really made it actually passable.
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize that it stuck around for that long. But yeah, that black like plastic piece is not, that's not it.
God, it's so terrible. But now that that is gone, and now that they've made it actually look, I think honestly just as good, right? This doesn't look visually any less attractive than a normal iPad Pro, so I'm happy for that. The thing is, for me, it comes down to, someone actually said this, let me scroll all the way back up, at the very, very beginning, before we actually started the stream, this is from like 5 hours ago, somebody put in the pre-show, what is truly iSad is people wanting the iPad to be a laptop. Crazy idea, if you want a laptop, buy the MacBook Air. Herbida, herbida, herbida. Yeah, okay, we get it. There's a lot of defenders out there who are saying, stop trying to make the iPad into a laptop. If you want a laptop, just buy a laptop. And to that I say, fair point. I've never said otherwise. But I don't want the iPad to be a laptop. I want it to be a better iPad. Because the problem is, it's not that I am saying like, hey, make it just be macOS. I just want it to justify its own price. Like this, so this setup here that I bought, I got the works, Noah, okay? Base model iPad Pro, new Magic Keyboard, and the new Apple Pencil. So if you want this thing with cellular, let me run the math on it real quick. Before tax, the base model 256 gig with cellular is $1,200, which is an oof.
That's the 11-inch?
Then it's Yes. The 11-inch, yes. $1,200, Noah, yes. Ooh. I know. Yes. So then $349 for the keyboard,
mm-hmm.
and then $129 for the Apple Pencil, okay? Pre-tax, this is $1,700.
Whoa.
$1,700. If you want to trick this thing out, it's astronomical. Astronomical, the amount of money that they will take away from your bank account if you want to do this properly, okay? Like, you know, you get 8 gigabytes of RAM in that. If you want 16 gigabytes of RAM, which I would argue you probably don't need, but if you do want that, you need a terabyte in the iPad Pro. And if you want the pricing just is actually mind-boggling. Okay, let's do a 13-inch in silver, 2 terabytes, nanotexture glass, Wi-Fi and cellular, no engraving, no trade-in. We're going to buy it. I want to add everything. Where's the keyboard? Where's the mouse? Did I miss it? Why is it not? Doesn't give me the option. Okay. Well, even before that, it's $2,600.
Oh, geez. For an iPad.
That's unbelievable. It just blows my mind. It really genuinely blows my mind. And this is my point, okay? I don't want the iPad to become a tablet. I mean, a laptop. Freudian slip.
Yeah.
I don't want the iPad to be a MacBook. But if it's going to cost more than a MacBook, I feel like it should maybe do a little bit more than it can. And I don't think that's crazy to ask.
Okay, I agree with you. I think the thing about the iPad is that it can do things that a Mac can't, right? The Apple Pencil and the whole like artist, student, whatever kind of thing that they're going for, that is like,
right.
As far as I can tell, that is like the differentiator for the iPad. Because everything else, right, like that Magic Keyboard that you put on, it looks like a Mac at that point. They even added the function keys, which is great, by the way. I've been wanting them to put function keys on that Magic Keyboard for the iPad forever. But that thing with the keyboard and the trackpad and everything, it is a Mac keyboard. So you can excuse people for, you know, making that comparison and saying that it could be a little bit more like a Mac if it has the keyboard of a Mac. But whatever. Okay. The thing, right, the artist and student pencil, that whole thing is the differentiating factor for the iPad. But when Apple does things like adding this keyboard, which since, you know, 2018 has gained a trackpad and function keys and, you know, all of that stuff, I don't think it's that ridiculous. And especially the price, when you compare the price of this thing to the price of a MacBook Air, right, it's so expensive. And it's like, it has a better display, by all means. It has a better display, and it can do things with a pencil, whatever. You can put cellular on it, which you can't do on a Mac. But, like, all I'm saying is that if you're buying it for a use case that is not the one differentiating use case, which is the artist use case, then you can excuse people for saying that it should be more like a Mac or should be more powerful or whatever, because I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and I think being more like a Mac doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be a Mac, right? I think something that would help a lot for me would be the ability to just not have to rely on the App Store, right? It's using the exact same chips as what you would find in a Mac, but I can go on Safari on my Mac, download apps, put them in a proper file system wherever I want, and just install and run apps. Like, why could I not install and play Minecraft on this iPad, right? Not saying that, like, you know, it's $1,000 thing, it's gonna do more than Minecraft, but something as simple as Minecraft I can't do. Even, you know, you can do that on a MacBook Air, just download it, boom, done. Why can't we do that on the iPad? I think it doesn't even necessarily have to be, you know, people always kind of assume when you say we want the iPad to do more that we want it to be doing all of this crazy stuff, like full desktop Final Cut Pro. I want to be doing a 4-stream 4K Final Cut project. I want to be able to, like, do the whole setup on it. Like, no, I don't need that much. But when you're talking about $1,000 starting price, I would like to be able to do even just simple things like the file management that you have on the Mac. They kind of did that, right? Everything is kind of a half step. They kind of implemented File Manager. They kind of implemented windowed computing. But it's just, it feels like shoehorned in there in a way that's very unnatural. And the way that the Mac has been doing it, I'm not saying it has to be a Mac, but the reason that the Mac is a Mac is because it has been just like this for basically 40 years at this point. And the reason that they're not changing it is because it's just kind of intuitive. Now, obviously, things can't be exactly the same, and there are strengths to the iPad, but the problem becomes when the iPad gets this expensive to get all of these features, what you're doing is kind of niching it down, okay? Let me go back to my tab that I pulled up here. This is a bag with a maxed out 13-inch iPad Pro. So if you want to get the Apple Pencil, you want to get the Magic Keyboard, and you want to get the nano texture glass and a 2-terabyte iPad with cellular, you're looking at $3,400, which is insane. $3,400. So for $3,400, and you don't need to do that, right? I would argue that given the limitations of the iPad, most people probably don't need more than 256. Most people probably don't need nanotexture glass or even cellular, right? So you can drop like $1,500 off of that. It's still expensive. And the problem is, as you mentioned earlier, Apple loves to focus on students and artists, okay? And that is a great use case. I have never, ever disputed the fact that the iPad is great for those demographics. However, you're niching the product down every time you make it more and more about that without addressing other things. Most people who own an iPad also own a Mac. So yeah, you can have them coexist. But if you want your iPad to do more, I don't think it's a cop-out to just say, oh, well, it's not for you. Because that's what's happened a lot. A lot of the times when I've criticized the iPad, they say, oh, well, it's not for you. But that's like barely a thing for Apple in any other way. Nobody looks at an Apple Watch and goes, oh, well, that's not for you. Nobody looks at, you know, even the pro-level iPhone. Totally normal, right, regular people, they'll just buy this because it looks good, right? You can justify, oh, I like the extra camera. You know, it's more durable, more premium feeling. Done. That's all it takes. But the iPad, for whatever reason, and this isn't just for me, because obviously I bought it. I'm not smart, okay? I'm not the one making smart financial decisions over here. But I'm speaking from a position of someone who reads hundreds and thousands of comments, and people feel this way. This is not just me as someone who is not an artist talking about a device that isn't for me. This is a massive thing where people are like, well, I want an iPad, but they're so expensive and they don't do the things that I want them to do. And it's just like, why can't we bridge that divide, right?
Yeah, the other problem with that idea of like, oh, the iPad's not for you, there's four types of iPads. There's the iPad Pro, the iPad Air, the iPad Regular, and the iPad Mini. And so if you say, oh, the iPad's not for you, you're saying all four types of iPads are not for you. And if there are, and if that applies to so mm-hmm. many people, then why are there four kinds of iPads? Why isn't there just one? You know what I mean? Like, if Apple went all in and they're like, if you want to do productivity, then you should use a Mac. If that's what people are saying, you know, if you want a Mac, get a Mac, then Apple should just go all in. They should have one iPad. Don't ditch the keyboard, you know, do the pencil, do the artist thing. Maybe they can have a basic keyboard. I don't know, whatever. But like, they're, and they can have one model, or maybe they can have like the big one and the small one or whatever. But I don't think that they need to have four different models and to have like a pro model if it's not going to be for everyone. And so the alternative is that mm-hmm. maybe there should be an iPad for everyone or for most people, but there isn't. And then that points to there being something lacking in the iPad, which I think there is. I think we both think that there is.
Yeah, I think you're right. And to be clear, I still think that the iPad is a good product, okay? I think that it is much easier to justify someone buying an iPad to add to their ecosystem than buying an Apple Vision Pro, right? It's a very different scenario. But the problem is, basically, as I found out in my review, I really enjoyed using this iPad and spending the last like week and a half with it. But everything that I did on this iPad, I could have done just as easily on the base model $350 iPad with cellular, right? I like things about this. I like that it has Face ID. I like that it has that tandem OLED display. I like that it's super thin. I like this new keyboard with the trackpad. I like all of those things. But in no way did this iPad unlock new capabilities compared to another iPad for me. And I know that that can also be true for people that the iPad Pro is targeted to. There are lots of people that I know that do legitimately use an Apple Pencil and use their iPad all the time for design work, for drawing, for note-taking, who are much better than me because I write like a seven-year-old. But even then, like, what really, really are you gaining with the iPad Pro, right? For artistry, you probably don't need the M4 chip, okay? You can do just fine with an iPad Air. And is it really worth an extra like $300-$400 just to get a better screen and Face ID? Because that's really what you're going to notice. Is that worth it? Even for the target demographic of the iPad, I know that there are people for whom that's not the case.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, especially with the, you know, the prices, you know, the price hikes and like whatever. Also, when you held up your iPad and I saw that home screen, I get so sad every time I look at the home screen of an iPad with the tiny little icons that are like way too spaced out and like, ugh, it's just it's just iOS on a screen that's like way too big for it, and that and the margins on the side when you have it in portrait mode, it just makes me like, I just like feel bad for it and like, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. That's the I think the weirdest part about this. And also, I don't want to seem like I'm hating on this, right? I actually really, really like this iPad. Like, I was watching movies on the plane. I was like, dang, that is the best screen Apple has ever made. I really liked this this keyboard. The keys, I actually think that this keyboard, the actual keys itself, are better than what you get on a MacBook. Like, it's super good. And the 11-inch, I think, is a good size. I think what I've really been realizing here is if an iPad is going to make sense for me, because this is a device that I've always liked but never really used that much. So what I think I'm realizing is, for me, this works best as a travel companion. That's why I swapped it for cellular, and that's why I wanted the 11-inch. Because an 11-inch iPad Pro, I'm not even talking about capabilities, right? We all know the limitations of iPad OS. But when it's like this, I basically want to just use this like a giant iPhone. That's basically how I'm treating it, right? I can be sitting on a plane on the tarmac waiting at the gate. You know, you sit there for 45 minutes just on your phone because you're not supposed to put your tray table down. And when you're taking off, you're not supposed to be on your laptop. Does not apply to tablets. You can keep them out and use them all the time. So I'm sitting there on the tarmac reading news, browsing Twitter, but on a big, nice screen. And with an 11-inch size, you know, you can hold it one-handed. You can even type two-handed like this. I guess you probably have to have somewhat large hands like me to do that, but it's totally usable just as a bare product, right? Then you get in the air, you put your tray table down, you pop it on your keyboard, you've got movies downloaded because of that iOS function, right? It's like the YouTube app, you can download videos. The Netflix app, the Prime, the HBO, all of that stuff, you can download stuff and watch it, and it's small, and it fits in an economy tray table, and the battery life was very good. I got more than 11 hours out of it. Like, I had a great time. Was it worth $1,700? Not even remotely, but I loved using it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And that the thing, like, that travel companion thing is the thing that I have been thinking about, because I have been doing a lot of travel lately, and I have been, usually I'll bring my 16-inch MacBook Pro, but lately I've just been like not bringing it, or like I'll bring it. Okay, here's the thing. When I fly on the plane, I feel like we've talked about this before, so I'll keep it brief, but like when I fly on a plane, I like to have my laptop for two reasons. One, I can spoof my Mac address so I can get unlimited free Wi-Fi. And two, I can like code on it, because that's what I like to code on the plane usually, because it makes the time go by quickly. So both of those things I can't do.
That's true. That only works for you.
Well, I was about to say, yeah, of course, you know, who among us
sitting there doing coding and he's like, this is great.
It is. I mean, you know, who among us has not, you know, built an app on a plane before, but no, the thing,
I haven't built anything on a plane. I cannot work on planes.
No, I don't know.
Sorry.
It's doable for me. But okay, here's the thing. The thing is that like, so I'll bring that, because I want both of those features, and I need a Mac to do that. But then like, other than the plane, like if I go, I don't know how to explain this, but when I go on a trip, I go on like sub trips. So like I'll go to Philly. This was what happened recently. I went to Philly, but then from Philly, I went to like DC, and I went to Detroit, and I went to Canada and Virginia, and I went like all over the place, right? So I brought my MacBook Pro to Philly and back, so I would have it on that long plane ride. But when I was going on those little sub trips, I didn't bring it, because it's like big and heavy. And I also had to bring my work laptop, which is also a 16-inch MacBook Pro. It's the Intel one.
You had two 16-inch MacBooks with you?
Yes. Dude, that's... See, you understand... You,
that's like the exact opposite of an iPad.
You understand my problem. You understand what I'm going
through. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Because mm-hmm. That's rough.
Yeah, I'm saying I have to bring my work laptop because I'm working remotely. And then, you know, I want to bring my personal laptop so that I have it. Whatever. So I've been thinking for a while about getting like a 13-inch MacBook Air because it's the exact opposite of the 16-inch MacBook Pro. It's the thinnest and lightest thing, and it's going to be powerful enough for the stuff that I'm trying to do, but it would be a nicer travel companion. But what would be even nicer is an 11-inch iPad that's even smaller. I mean, I have the one that I have right now, but like if Apple made one that could do what I need it to do, that would be the perfect travel companion right there. But unfortunately, it's a little bit too limited for me to want to use. And so sometimes I still bring it with me to, like, you know, if I want to watch a movie or a TV show or something on the plane. But like usually I'll just not even bring it on a trip because it's like it's that Goldilocks thing, or maybe the opposite of that. It's not good enough, you know, for a Mac, and it's not good enough for a phone if I already have my phone. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like the anti-Goldilocks. You're right. And I feel like that, I mean, that's a good point, right? Everyone always talks about who the iPad is and isn't for. But the iPad could be perfect for you for that exact reason. Like, let's say hypothetically, in the situation you're describing, what you have is this weird fringe case, right, where the MacBook that you have, you want to have a 16-inch. You've always wanted the big screen to have lots of room, better battery, more performance. You know, fair enough. Absolutely fine. But it's a big laptop. You don't necessarily want to bring it with you. So what Apple could have done if the iPad was more capable was get you on two devices. Right? They could say, look, you want the big screen with the most battery and the most performance? We got you. Here's a 16-inch MacBook Pro. But you want to go traveling and be able to do your work on the move in the smallest form factor possible? We got you. 11-inch iPad Pro. But they didn't. And so what you end up with is you kind of either have to buy like a Goldilocks Mac, something like a 14-inch MacBook Pro that has the blend of performance and portability. Or like you say, you know, if you want the maximum portability, you have to sacrifice all of the performance and the screen and the battery life to get a MacBook Air. But they could have just got you to get two things, and two of the most expensive things, right? I mean, a 16-inch MacBook Pro plus an 11-inch iPad Pro, that's a lot more expensive than just buying an M3 MacBook Air. And they could have had you, they could have sold you on that. But because the iPad doesn't do enough, you might as well just get an M3 MacBook Air, which is cheaper than all of the above options and does what you want.
Yeah, exactly. Like the iPad, I would have gotten an iPad, a new iPad Pro, if it did enough to justify it. And you know what? Maybe, I don't know if we want to transition yet, but maybe at DubDub we'll see something improve, but I don't know. I don't know about that.
Good transition. Right on the half hour, too. That was well done.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's a good point. And I mentioned that in my video tomorrow? Tuesday? I don't know when it's going to come out. But it's kind of weird. Kind of weird to review an iPad 1 month, now 2 weeks before WWDC, because obviously they didn't do, we've talked about this in the run-up to these iPads, you know, what, how does Apple navigate this when you're announcing a new hardware product a month before your software event? And they did the thing that we were kind of expecting, which is just basically ignore software altogether. But now I feel like what happens in 2 weeks is kind of very key to the success and future of this iPad.
Yeah, definitely. I think the weird thing that I keep forgetting is like in 2 weeks they're going to tell us what's going to happen, but it's not going to actually come out until September or October or whenever it's going to come out. So this like iPad is actually going to go a few months before it gets that software. But I absolutely agree with you that Apple needs to do something to justify this, the iPad. And like, I mean, dub is when it happens. That's the one time in a year that they're really going to do the software, and they really need to do the software.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like every single year we kind of go, look, now you've got to do something. And every single year, they don't. But it's, and you know, the weird thing is the iPad was at its most successful when it did almost the least. 2014, that was the year that iPad sales peaked, and they have never matched that level. It went down a bunch and then went back up in 2018, 19, and then went back down again. I don't know if this is going to move the needle, but isn't that weird? Like, 2014 is when the iPad was literally just iOS. They called it iOS, same as the iPhone. There was, I don't think they had any split screen. I don't think they had any like multitasking. It was literally just exactly the same as what the iPhone could do, but with a bigger screen. And that's when they sold the most units.
Yeah, and I think that, I think Apple Silicon actually has a lot to blame, quote unquote, for what's happened, because like, I mean, that was a time when the Macs, like the Mac laptops, you know, they had Intel chips and they had the like battery life and thermal concerns, and you know, like you could get a MacBook Air back then, but it really was like the portability, you were sacrificing a lot to get the portability aspect and the thin and light aspect of the MacBook Air. Whereas now with Apple Silicon, that's not really the case. And so I think Apple Silicon has like allowed the Macs to catch up, and sort of, it, basically the Macs can do that like thin and light thing that the iPad, and then the battery life and, you know, all the stuff that from being an ARM chip that the iPad used to be like, you know, if you wanted a big screen and like the good battery life and thermals and whatever, you get like an iPad. But now the Macs kind of have that too. So it's like a little bit harder to justify the iPad. I think that's why it was, that's why it's kind of happened.
Yeah. It is kind of ironic because how many years ago was it at some WWDC? I want to say it was maybe like 2019. They straight up addressed the whole, is the iPad just going to become the Mac? Are they going to merge? Blah, blah, blah. And they just said straight up, no, we're not doing that. And we were all like, good, keep them separate. But ironically, they've kind of converged anyway, and not in the way that we expected. It's just because a lot of the properties that the iPad had were properties of Apple Silicon, which now by definition apply to the Mac because they have the same chips. So I don't know. It is interesting. I think it's kind of for better and for worse. Like, the Mac has gotten better in a lot of ways, but it's also gotten more locked down, harder to repair, completely not upgradable. You know, I think honestly the iPad and the Mac have become more similar than people realize.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and the reason why people don't realize it is, I think, because they're less similar at the software level, and they are still similar. There's a mm-hmm. lot of, you know, features that exist on both of them and whatever, but like
center stage.
Yeah, well, we don't talk about that. On that stays disabled on the Mac. We don't touch that. Yeah, I agree feature. With you there. But but yeah, I mean, like, even the software has like converged, but like, especially if you look at the hardware, where like obviously they're both using the like identical chips, first of all, which is huge. Or I guess like whatever, they're both using Apple Silicon, right? The M4 is not in a Mac yet, but you know, it will be. So they're using identical chips. You look at like the iPad with that Magic Keyboard. I mean, come on, the Magic Keyboard with the function row, it's literally like a Mac keyboard. Maybe it's better, you said it felt better or whatever, but it's basically a Mac keyboard, like in the iPad. They are very, very similar. And I feel like at this point, Apple keeping them separate, I understand why. I understand that the iPad is a different thing, but it is very It's very like artificial by definition, because there's no reason why you couldn't run macOS on an iPad, right? And I'm not saying that you should. I'm not saying it would be a good experience, but there's no reason why you can't do that. And there's no reason why you can't take features mm-hmm. from macOS and bring them to the iPad or vice versa, whatever. And so that line is really a line that Apple is drawing now, whereas it used to be like, you know, more fundamental, like, oh, it's ARM versus x86, or it's like, you know, they're different hardware, you know, whatever the other reason could be.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. That's definitely, I think maybe now the pressure is on them to make them more similar intentionally. And I think that they can be more similar without overlapping or stepping on each other's toes. Like, I think that you can add macOS type features to the iPad without compromising its ability to be an iPad. But really, I think what it comes down to is iPads are best at the price point that Steve Jobs put it at 14 years ago, which is $500. For $500, you can still get all the iPads you need. You can find a 2018 or a 2020 cellular iPad Pro. You could get an iPad Air with an M1 chip, probably. You know, you can find a huge range of iPads for $500. And for most people, even the like, even the pro people, even the people who do the drawing and the stuff that Apple says, you know, you need to do, even they can get by just fine without buying the latest one. But the challenge really now is, can we take that software to the next level, right? I think when you look at the base model iPad and iPad OS, I think, yeah, that's about right. That makes sense. You know, I think for $350, iPad OS is really capable. The issue is just for $1,000, it's not as capable. But anyway, sorry, we keep talking about the iPad. It lives in my head rent-free. But we do have a bunch of iOS 18 rumors. And I'll be honest, I haven't kept up with them as well as I should have, because it seems like this year's going to be pretty big.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of talk on Twitter, but I'm definitely excited. I'm excited for this year. I think there's going to be some cool things.
The one that I saw today, and I want to see if I can find this. Okay, here we go. This is a Forbes article, but, you know, we'll allow it. Basically, I mean, this is from, it's from Gurman. I just found this is the first tab that I found. But Gurman is saying that iOS 18 is going to be super duper customizable. And this really, really got me excited, because obviously Apple always adds features that I appreciate. And, you know, there's always things where, you know, I go back to using an old iPhone and I'm like, oh, it doesn't have that feature. Like, even simple stuff. Like, remember when they added the ability to, like, swipe on the side here to go back? You know, they're always adding those little ease of use things. But by far and away, one of the things that people have wanted for a long time is customization. And Gurman is now saying that this could be a really, really big year. So first of all, he says the home screen is going to be different, including letting you change the color of app icons and putting them wherever they want, which is something that we used to do this on iOS 8. We would jailbreak them, get Winterboard on there to try to do these features. It took them 10 years, and now they're like, hey, you can do it. Apparently, they won't even need to be placed in the standard grid that we've had since 2007.
That's pretty interesting. I feel like Apple has done some things for customization in recent years. I think, like, obviously the lock screen, that whole redesign that they did for the lock screens is pretty cool. You can put widgets and stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the app library because you could take icons off of your home screen. It's not much for customization, but, like, at least you could do that, and I really, really appreciate that. But, yeah, I feel like this would definitely be cool, because that's one of the things about the iPhone is that, like, you know, across the board, they're pretty, like, standardized for better or for worse. But, like, I don't know if I would change the color of my app icons. Maybe I would just for fun, but like, you know, moving them around, whatever other ways you can customize it, like, there's, it's always a good thing to be able to customize.
That is, yeah, that's true. I forgot about the whole lock screen. It's always weird, though, because when Apple does the customization, they always neglect things. Like, remember, we talked about it a little while ago, how they added the ability to remove the wallpaper from the always-on display. It's always stuff like that where I'm like, why would you not just have that from the start? Mm-hmm. Like, they always think, oh, well, you know, why would people want to just see the time and not see their wallpaper? That would be ridiculous. I'm like, no. Why would I want to have to see my notifications when the phone is off? I'm like, Jesus, give me some separation of church and state here, you know? So stuff like that, they always implement it well, but it takes them a while to kind of realize, oh, wait a minute. People kind of want to move stuff around. They might want to change the colors and like make their phone all aesthetic. Kind of sounds like all of these features are very TikTok friendly. You know what I mean? Like I'm definitely going to make, like, the way that I'm going to review a lot of these is going to be in TikToks. Like, that's kind of who it's for. It's like people who are like, oh my gosh, I can make my phone look aesthetic. That's what people are going to love. You don't have to do, you know, iMessage games. You don't have to do Bitmojis or whatever those Memoji things, stupid as they were. You can just let people do whatever they want, and that's kind of a feature that they like.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me personally, it's not going to be that big of a deal because, like, I'm fine with my, like, I have, you know, my pages. I have my work page and my travel page and my exercise page, and I have some widgets and some app icons on each page, and, like, I don't really need to change the app icon colors or, like, move the icons around or whatever. Like, that's not really going to do much for me, but, like, you know, for other people who want to have that customization, I think it's great that they can have it. And maybe there will be other parts of iOS that can be customized. And, you know, maybe I'll like customizing those parts. I think it could be cool if they have like app icon packs, like we said with Winterboard, like you mentioned, that, like, you know, you could switch up the app icons and, like, you know, make your phone feel, you know, a little bit fresh, or I don't even know what else you would do, but, like, being able to customize things is always a good thing. You can choose not to, but, like, there might be some things that you want to customize, and then it's nice.
I just worry that it's going to be one of those things where the customization is very sort of forced. You know, they kind of make you customize very specific things. And, like, I don't know, when they did the lock screen, I feel like they let you do a lot, but then they lock you out of doing certain things. Like, what if I want to rearrange? What if I want the widgets on top of the time? I don't think you can do that. What if you want to put the widgets on the bottom of the screen for whatever reason? I don't know. I guess they want to control the experience and have everything be sort of kind of homogenous. So it's kind of like this weird customization within homogeneity. Very strange. But you know what? I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. I'm just going to take the win and say, look, if we want to just absolutely deck out our lock screens and home screens and make it, you just know that there's going to be people out there that are like doing like a whole white and gold aesthetic. And they're like, oh my gosh, this matches my bars of soap. You know, there's going to be all of that stuff. And you know what? Power to them. You should be able to do that if you want to do that.
Yeah, that's exactly. I agree completely. It's up to you. If you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. But if you want to do it, then you can, you know, you can have fun doing it.
Now, there is also the AI aspect of all of this, because across the board, whether you're talking about VisionOS or if you're talking about iOS, iPadOS, and macOS, AI, this is apparently the year, right? We thought it was going to be last year. They needed more time. But one of the things that I'm very curious about, shall we say, is apparently they're adding generative emojis.
Oh, I did see that on Twitter today. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a quote from Gurman now. He says, "One standout feature will bring generative AI to emojis. The company is developing software that can create custom emojis on the fly based on what users are texting. That means you'll suddenly have an all-new emoji for any occasion, beyond the catalog of options that Apple currently offers on the iPhone and other devices." That's interesting. So how janky is that going to look is what I want to know. Because, right, this is Apple we're talking about. The king of polish and manufactured perfection. Are they really going to allow you to do, like, weird doctor guy punching a cactus in the face, and then they're going to generate that, and it's going to look kind of, like, weird and smudgy like a lot of AI does? How's it going to work?
Yeah, this is an interesting thing. First of all, I could go on and on about emojis because I think they're fascinating, like, the way that they work, and I'm not going to do that, but I do think it's fascinating. But
I kind of think you should give us a little taste of that. I'm kind of curious now.
Well, okay, I'll tell you the one thing that I was thinking of. But the first thing that I'll say is that I think this is an interesting use case of generative AI for Apple because it's very specific. So it's not like ChatGPT where it's like, ask whatever you want and we'll try to come up with an answer. This is like, we will make an emoji. The output is going to be an emoji, you know, period. First of all, and that's already pretty narrow. But then I wonder if how specific you can be, like you said, and I wonder if it'll even just be that you can, like, combine emojis, like existing emojis, and it'll just generate an image of what that combination would look like. So you can't invent something out of thin air, but you can say, let me combine these two or three emojis together, and iOS will sort of figure that out.
Laughing, crying, head exploding, airplane. And it just, like, puts a guy in the cockpit of an airplane with, like, the crying, laughing, and the head explosion.
I mean, you know, if it can do that, then that's great. But I feel like that would make sense, and it would be a bit safer, because the thing is, like, if you make it an open prompt, people are going to put all kinds of crazy things in there. And I don't think that Apple will do that. There's another topic, which is that I read something interesting about how Apple might handle all of this. But I think for the emoji case specifically, I think it's going to be, if they do this, you can combine existing emojis together, and that Apple and that iOS will generate like a representation of that emoji. That's my guess.
It'll be weird. Now that you mention it, I was wondering, like, what will happen if, like, how are you going to just command it to do this? But it seems like, based on what users are texting, it seems like you're not going to be sort of request, like, it's not like you're going to click the emoji tab and then type generate and type an emoji where the guy does this and that, right? It seems like you're going to kind of be texting, and it's just going to show up on your screen an emoji in the way that it, like, if you type fire, the fire emoji comes up in the suggestion box. It'll probably show up over there like that. So it won't be something that you tell it to create. It'll sort of create something in the background and suggest it. And I kind of like that idea. I guarantee that's how it's going to work, because this is Apple. And we talked about this before, but I don't see Apple doing a, you know, chatbot. They're not going to do speak to an AI and the AI will do something for you. No, this is going to be much more integrated. And I think that would allow them to sort of avoid the pitfalls of AI, which is when you ask it to do something really, really weird and it can't really figure it out, and you get, like, the Google fiasco where it's telling people to eat a rock every day and put glue in their pizza.
Yeah.
It avoids, like, the weird, like, Will Smith eating spaghetti videos. Like, you can get around all of that by just not letting people directly interact with the AI. And that, I think, honestly, legitimately makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, like, automatic suggesting kind of thing, but I do think that that makes sense. The interesting thing, and again, I don't want to get too much into, like, the technical details and everything, but, like, The reason why I think that they will let you combine existing emojis, or maybe they'll take, you know, when you type something and you go to the emoji thing and all the things light up in orange, and it, like, the things that you can tap and replace them with emojis, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that thing, they can use that thing to be like, okay, here's what you're writing, here's the emojis that are related, let's combine some of them together. The only reason why I think that it would work like that is because every emoji is... Okay, when you send messages, everything gets encoded into Unicode. It's just like the standard encoding. And every character in Unicode has a code point. So this is every, like, you know, letter in the English alphabet, every letter in every other alphabet, and even emoji. So every single emoji has a unique code point that represents it. And this is why emojis look different. So if I send it on an iPhone to someone on an Android, it's going to look different. It's obviously not sending a picture of the emoji. It's sending that code point. It encodes it into that point. And then, you know, you go and look, and when it gets decoded, it renders in whatever font you have on your system, right? And then there's an interesting thing where some emojis actually are combinations of other emojis. So for example, the polar bear, I'm pretty sure this is true, but the polar bear emoji is actually a combination of the bear emoji and the snowflake emoji. And
really?
Yeah, and this is also, so the families are also, so if you have, like, you know, the emojis for, like, family of three and family of four, they're actually combinations of three or four individual people with this special character called a zero-width joiner in between them. So it's like man, zero with joiner, woman, zero with joiner, child, whatever, child. And then it's able, and that's how you can have, like, the families, and you can change the individual people in the family, and they don't have to have a million different code points for every possible combination. They just join them together, okay? And the nice thing about this, not only can you represent all those combinations, but if you send the text to someone on a system that doesn't support it, it will still render in a reasonable way. So if you send the polar bear emoji to an old version of iOS or some other platform that doesn't have it, it will just render as bear snowflake. Or if you send the family of four emoji, it'll render as person, 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 which is not what's intended to be, but it's still comprehensible, and you can tell what the person was trying to say. And so if Apple does it this way, and I don't know how exactly it would work, but if you could just combine emojis and they sent them as separate emojis with this, like, joiner character or something like that, then it would work on Android and other places that, you know, wouldn't normally support it. But then on iOS, it can, you know, do whatever generative AI stuff it wants to do. So that was my theory about how it could work.
That is interesting. Because how... Yeah, I guess it's... It makes sense when you're sending it between devices that are, you know, up to date and on Apple's ecosystem, but I do wonder how it's gonna... I totally forgot about the whole, like, code point based emoji system where it's not like it's sending a little picture. It's sending a code that corresponds to a font, which is a little picture, basically.
Yeah.
So that is interesting, because what will it do? I guess the generative part is more of how it renders a combination of existing code point emojis.
Yeah.
Like, it seems unlikely then, if you're talking about compatibility, if it were to create a completely new code point for an emoji and you send it to someone with an Android, they're just gonna, like, it just wouldn't show up as anything, right?
Yeah, it wouldn't, that wouldn't really, like, it wouldn't make sense to do that. So they could do one thing, which is, like, if you're, you know, you have to, the recipient has to be on the latest version of iOS in order for this to work, and otherwise it just never does anything, which would be kind of weird. Or they could do, but it would still be weird, like, if you send it to someone on Android, maybe they'll get something that kind of makes sense, but it's not going to look like what it looks like to you, obviously, because Android doesn't have all this stuff. So I don't know. I think it's a very interesting idea for a feature. I think it makes sense for Apple because it's very specific, but there are a lot of questions. So we'll see if they actually do this.
That is, yeah. That is weird. That is definitely going to be, I'm very curious how they're going to navigate that. I mean, that's like, a very small and specific feature that is in this quite large pool of rumors that we're talking about for iOS 18. It really is. I don't know. I think this WWDC might be one of the biggest, at least from a software perspective, because I don't think we're going to get any hardware. I think it's probably just going to, you know, we already got an event like 2 weeks ago for iPad. So, I mean, maybe they could put an M4 chip in Macs. That I could see potentially. But I wouldn't be surprised if they don't do that. In fact, it would be kind of inconvenient for me personally if they do hardware in new Macs, because I'm traveling so much this summer that I probably would miss the launch, and that would be a really big bummer. But setting that aside, the other thing that I'm most curious about with just 3 minutes left here today is Vision OS, because this is going to be the first time, presumably, they're going to have new Vision OS features. I don't possibly know what they could be. We had that pretty big update that I haven't even been able to use because you returned your Vision Pro, where you can have multiple Vision Pros viewing the same thing and you can kind of be virtually in the same room. But when do they make Vision Pro more useful? I haven't touched mine in a while.
Yeah, I was going to say, someone in the chat said that, like, this is a long time ago. They said, like earlier today, they're like, oh, I forgot that Vision Pro even existed. And when I read that, I was like, you know what? I have not thought about that thing in any capacity in a long time, which is kind of weird because it's, like, a major Apple product. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I didn't think about it.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And it's the weirdest, truly one of the weirdest situations, because it was rumored for years. We were talking about that pre-COVID, remember? And like now, then it just kind of came out and we were like, oh, wow. Okay, new iPads. Whoa, look at that. Like, it's crazy that we have ended up in this situation.
Yeah, I can't believe. I mean, like, Apple needs. I think this all points to the fact that Apple needs to do something with Vision OS to you know, bring the hype back, because like it came out in February, people were talking about it. It was big when it came out, and then I think it kind of like the buzz died down very quickly, and it has been basically zero. I haven't really seen people talking about it like in a while. And I think that Apple needs to do something to Vision OS to, you know, because I don't think we're going to get new hardware for a little while. So it has to be software. And I think that they have a lot of work to do. So I hope they do something big.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, I'm nervous, Noah, because hardware really is the big sticking point for me. Like, I'm honestly very happy with Vision OS. I don't have a lot of complaints with it. It's just like every time I sit down and I think I could put on Vision Pro right now, I then kind of immediately just go, eh, but then I have to like do all that. And I don't know what software features they could do that would kind of command Z that apprehension. Like even just when I went traveling, I didn't bring it on the plane the last time. Now, granted, that was also partially because we had the new iPads, and I wanted to review that, and I didn't really want to bring an iPad, a MacBook, and Vision Pro all at the same time. But I was just kind of like packing for that trip, and I was like, I could bring it and watch a movie, but my face is going to hurt. And for 4 hours, I don't want to be in there for 4 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's kind of it.
There's a great comment here from eUploads. Vision Pro is like the opposite of iPad in terms of software hardware. Absolutely. Vision Pro needs the hardware improvements, and iPad OS needs the software improvements. That's a great point, 100%.
They should honestly switch the teams, like the Vision OS team should go work on iPad OS, and the iPad Pro team should go work on Vision Pro.
Honestly, like, you know, bring, like, there are clearly those teams are good at one thing and not as good at another thing. So I could see it. I could see it.
Yeah.
Tim, hire me. You don't need a consultant firm, okay? Deloitte, McKinsey, screw those guys, okay? Come to us. We can figure it out. Well, and eUploads for giving us the idea, but that's contract work. So we're going to still bill them for that. I think that's fair. So, yeah, I mean, that's honestly very, very true. They should switch teams.
I mean, and you know, it's funny because the Vision Pro and the iPad are kind of in the same niche in some way. Obviously, like, they have their own separate niches, but they're both those, like, middle ground products that's like between a phone and a Mac that you use for, like, entertainment and, like, other things. I feel like they're in some ways they're actually kind of similar, and they could probably benefit from you know, learning some things from each other.
Yeah, I think they should. They should really all sit down as like a group and talk about their feelings, right? Because on the one, you've got the Mac, right? The Mac, strong position, right? Now, granted, they inherited a good thing. The Mac has been pretty consistent, pretty useful, and pretty well-liked for the past 40 years. Then there's the iPhone, right? The iPhone is like pretty stable, you know? The worst thing you could say about the iPhone is it's not exciting. You don't really say that they're bad or useless, yeah, or, you know, it's boring. The Mac, honestly, that could be getting towards boring territory too, with the way that it's just consistently, incrementally good. But Vision Pro and the iPad are examples of times where Apple was like, all right, look, we gotta think outside the box. We gotta do something new. But what? They did it successfully with the Apple Watch. That's the best example of Apple coming up with a new category and it working really well. The iPad is a little stuck, and Vision Pro, which has only been out for 4 months, is already a little stuck. But hopefully all that will change, and we will be right here with you guys to watch that happen. So as a reminder, we're off next Sunday because, you know, we like to keep you guessing. And we'll be back the day before WWDC to talk about, I mean, I'll put together a whole thing. We'll do a rumor roundup, I think. That'll be a fun idea. And then we'll be here. We'll watch WWDC live. We missed one event, but we won't miss this one. And hopefully you guys won't miss it either, because we're going to be right here.
Yeah, I like that transition. You're like, oh, we're going to be right here watching it, but not next week. Next week's not, we're not going to be watching it next week, but after that, we'll be right here watching it.
Yes, this is like an abusive relationship that we're creating here with the audience, where we're kind of like getting them used to it and then taking it away and then giving it back and being like, you should just be grateful, okay? You should be grateful that we're coming to you and doing the thing that we're supposed to do every week, okay? This was a blessing. And I was your host, Luke Mion.
I was your host, Noah Rubin. We'll see you in 2 weeks and have a great night.
Take care.